Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Also, this is the wind-up. This is the introduction. Hello, Josh Brown. I'm Scott Tilford. How are you?
I'm in pain, Scott Tilford. Let me tell
From
you that.
From that song that we attempted, or just in general?
A bit of both, because that song, which I think is called September by Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yes.
I've heard that so many times in the club, and I only know...
In the club?
And I only know the line, September.
I feel like everyone just kind of goes, blah, September, like just sort of bring it back in again. And I want to say it's party hard. Until September, but I that's not enough. I can't make that fit.
I would never have guessed that. Party hard.
Party
September.
Hard. If Andy WK ever did a version of this song, he would very much call it Party Hard.
Yeah.
And it would unite all the spheres.
I'd listen to that.
Of good things in my life. So this is the wind up where we dive into whatever the latest talking points in the industry are, whether it's new stuff, whether it's game stuff. Obviously, game stuff continues to not be that active right now.
Yes.
However, you are about to talk about a new video game that is out there.
Can you believe it?
I can't really believe it. I kind of forgot it existed. I did download it. We'll get there. And then we'll dive into some new stuff as well, because there are actually some new stories doing the rounds at the minute. But we'll start with what we've been playing. So the first thing is As Dusk Falls, which is sort of like the latest... narrative adventure, choose your own adventure style, dialogue driven thing.
Yes.
That's doing the rounds. It's on Game Pass. So I downloaded this and I haven't played it. I think people will know it from the kind of interesting art design style that it has, where it almost looks like a lot of photos were taken of the characters and they sort of just blend between each other and that's the animation. I quite like that, but I saw a lot of people saying it looked cheap.
Yeah, it's very strange. I wouldn't necessarily say cheap. You know, it's an interesting way to get around how many scenarios that they have in the game, because like you said, it is a choose your own adventure where you're making dialogue options, you know, you're branching your pathways off and stuff. And it's an interesting style because you do have regular game animation in there. For instance, if you're in a car at one point and the car kind of swerves against incoming traffic and all that's rendered regularly, and then you cut back to the characters who were in that kind of motion graphic style. Mm-hmm. And it does take some getting used to. There are some unintentionally hilarious faces that are lingered on now and again to the reaction
even
shots
though they're
and
still
stuff.
Shot, so they kind of should have been like sorted, I guess, rather than make look stupid.
I guess so. It's just, you know, because they're still trying to wring emotion out of the quote-unquote performances.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, things are getting intense, like the faces will change from, you know, kind of bewildered to angry and whatnot to match the dialogue.
Right.
And that kind of makes sense. Like I said, it just takes a lot of getting used to. It's a really, like, unique game, and I've been having a lot of fun with it, but I find it quite funny because if you remember the announcement for it, the developers were talking about how they wanted this to feel like a prestige TV show, and it feels like a soap opera, and it's not a prestige TV show, but I actually wouldn't have it any other way because I like the pulpiness of these soap opera stylings.
Right.
It's very much a kind of script and a sense of direction that's aiming for, you know, a Breaking Bad style story, but it's reaching like EastEnders story.
Oh God! Okay,
but I like that a lot.
If they should have. Why did no one ever do a Coronation Street EastEnders Brookside choose your own adventure dialogue driven game? Why does that not exist? Why are there not more soap opera games?
I think when that
all of our
is
collective
made,
mums would love those games.
I don't think my mum would love that. You know,
well, she'd play one of them. What was her favorite soap?
She used to like Hollyoaks.
There
which
you go.
Was my favorite soap.
Yeah,
too.
That was like, oh man, if they did like an OC one. I mean, like this is a whole wing of gaming that should exist.
I'll tell you what.
Go
I would take Hollywood, not Hollywood, Hollyoaks After Dark, which is what they did, you know, as a limited event series where you could allow swearing and Ooh, sex in Hollyoaks.
Right.
It was like the adult version. I would take a game version of that.
I tell you what you would take is a Love Island version of this.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Why is there not? Like, there's so many dating sims out there.
Yeah.
Do a Love Island game. I think you can get it on mobile. It's not going to be the same, though, is it? I want it in this style.
I want it to be done properly. Do a Telltale style. Let me have some ramifications. Quarry style as you get through the island. Anyway, as Dust Falls, I keep getting confused with the one that's coming out that stars Caitlin Dever, and I think it's the next game by the Fulbright company, who are the dudes that did Gone Home.
Yeah.
I think it's called Open Roads or something like that.
Yes, it is.
Is that definitely the right one?
Because it is.
There's also another game called like Route 99 or something, and they're all the same game. They're all like road trip games in dusty, like back of Beyond America stylings and everything, and I like that idea. What is the actual premise of As Dusk Falls? What is the elevator pitch?
Well, I'm pleased you ask, because that was what I was about to get into. The elevator pitch is you are playing as this family who are driving across America because they're moving house. The wife has just got a new job. Can you play as James Doubt?
Yeah, he was moving house last week.
Was he really?
Helping someone move house.
I wish you could play as James Doubt.
I wish, yeah.
Maybe you should play this
game. Put him in more games, to be honest.
Yeah, it'll be relatable for him. Yeah, so you're playing as this family who are moving house. They're driving across country. The wife has just got a new job. The husband has just lost his job. And they've just reconnected with the husband's father, who was estranged for many years. He's got a brain tumor. He's come back into the family to kind of reintegrate himself. So this family drama is coming along. They swerve out the road against some boys who are coming in the opposite direction, some rowdy lads who are, you know, drinking and they're throwing stuff and they're real meanies. Anyway, right. Those lads, as it turns out, are on the way to kind of pull a burglary. They're robbing the house of the local sheriff. When this is all going on, the family has to stay at this motel, and then the robbers end up at the same motel as a kind of like refuge, trying to get away from the police. So then you have this hostage situation where you're playing as the family who are hostages of these robbers and all the tensions that come from with that. And you get flashbacks as well to the stories of the robbers before the robbery and the story of the family before they're in the situation a few days before they started to move.
That's cool.
And there's a bunch of soap opera drama that's going on in between the action of this, you know, heist, essentially.
Right.
And there's a lot of really great scenes in there where you have like agency over the characters and how they respond, and it's really intense, man. Like, a lot of the choices are genuinely the kind of like, you're in the moment, you don't know what to pick, you don't want the scenario to unfold in a really unpredictable way.
Right.
Because what I like about this is that, like, the characters are just pieces of trash in a lot of ways. They've all got, like, baggage. They've all got bad things that they've done.
Okay.
And some of them are incredibly, incredibly unlikable.
Like, you don't mind if they die.
You don't mind if they die. And that's interesting to navigate.
On the side of the robbers.
100%. I thought, especially early on, I've not finished the game, by the way. I'm about halfway through. Early on, like, you expect the robbers to kind of maybe have a heart of gold. Maybe kind of, you know, maybe you're going to eventually side with them to go against the police and whatnot.
Right.
But like, in those early hours, they're pieces of trash, man. They're like battering you around. They're like taking your wife and child hostage and stuff.
Wait a minute, I thought you meant the family were trash.
Oh, they're also. Well, okay. I don't want to spoil too much.
Okay,
but they have their history as well. They've been through a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of twists relating to that family, which you find out that kind of colors your opinion of them in some really kind of, like I said, you know, hard-hitting scenes in a lot of way. It's just twist after twist after twist. In all of them, I was either shocked or I was like laughing. You know, it's a funny game, both intentionally and unintentionally, with the amount of stuff they throw at you. And I've been having a wild time. I've been playing it with my girlfriend. And we've been like, you know, you kind of like the Quarry style. You get into those situations where, you know, you're both
don't go
kind
in
of,
that room.
Yeah, don't go in that room. You're looking at each other like, what do I do? What do we do next? I don't want these guys to die. Or how are we gonna, you know, play out this relationship drama? Does this person deserve to be forgiven? For instance. For something they may or may not have done. All of those questions are going through your head, and I'm really excited to play more.
In terms of the art style and in terms of the way you control it, is it responsive? Does the art style get in the way at all? And like, do they bring across the, let's say, tropes of the genre? Like, you've got a timer on screen, make this decision right now, things are going to happen. It's one of them at this stage.
Yes, absolutely. Like, it's more of an interactive movie than a game, but that's in a good way, because like I said, the art style is limited in terms of what you could even do in the game anyway. So you essentially have a cursor, and it's classic adventure game style. You're moving the cursor around the screen sometimes to kind of like, you know, check in a cupboard or do this or what have you. And then you're choosing dialogue options that, again, have that timer that gives you the sense of pressure. And then you have a few quick time events as well where you're, you know, swiping left on the D-pad or you're trying to mash X to, you know, perform an action.
That sounds cool. I mean, the thing that got me in initially was that art style. I'm definitely curious to try it out. Like I said, I downloaded it, and then, like I said, in my head, it's like all three games exist as one, and I just want the Caitlyn Dever one. I want the one by the Fulbright Company, because I want to see what they've done. It's been forever since Tacoma, and even longer since Gone Home. It's almost a decade since Gone Home.
Yes.
That was 2013.
Crazy.
Which makes me default more interested in that. But the way you're describing this as this sort of soap opera meets weighty decisions, people die simulator,
yeah.
I'm kind of game for that too.
It's a lot of fun, man. It has some incredibly memorable characters in it. Like the grandfather or the father of the husband is, man, like that dude has so much baggage. It's almost comical, like the amount of twists that come out of his story. He's such a liability. And I love that. I love any character who's just kind of like a mess.
You
don't want this dude in a hostage situation. He's going to make things worse. And I love having him as a kind of agent of chaos. And I was howling at some of the things that he gets involved with. But it's interesting because I was howling at some of his developments, but you might not even see those developments, right?
Because of the branching stuff.
Yeah, you might go down a different route with your options, and you might not get those scenes, which is really cool. You know, after every chapter, you get the classic Telltale style kind of like overview of your decisions, so you understand how many percentage of players chose X and rather than Y, which is quite cool, because on a few of mine, it was like 20% of people did this, and it's interesting to see what the other outcome would have been, because you kind of have to go through a chapter select to see that. So I don't know what the branching or how extensive the branching pathways are, but when you just see the flow chart, these seem quite intense, you know.
I hope more people play it for them. I feel like this genre has kind of become the streamer genre, and it's like overall, it's like you may sometimes make these games for streamers, for audiences, for one person, just like, you know, steering the ship, and they'll ask like the audience what they should do next and whatever, and that's fine. Excuse me, but I feel like I encourage more people to play them, because I feel like you should see those branching things yourself. You should have more agency in the story. Like some of the most memorable ones of these that I've been through are Heavy Rain, or was the first season of The Walking Dead, or whatever. And I hope that enough people play this, because it's just kind of just on Game Pass, like it was advertised, whatever, but it's just kind of there now in amongst this other like malaise that's going on. And I feel like it's not turning heads, but it is available. Like the game has actually come out. It was just in amongst everything else on Game Pass.
Totally. What I like about the choices in this one especially, you know, you said that a lot of the fun is coming from your own agency within the story. What I like about the choices in this game is that, you know, sometimes when you play something like The Quarry, for as good as it is, you can kind of see, you kind of, as good as some people in this room think it is.
Yes.
You can kind of see the workings of the developers putting the choices together. Mm. So you can kind of guess sometimes that if I do this, it'll lead to that, which will lead to a good outcome. What I like about this game is that, you know, the situations that you're thrown in are so unique and so unpredictable that you might think you're doing the right thing or that will get you a good outcome. And then suddenly there'll be something you didn't think about that comes to bite you in the bum, which I really enjoy, because, you know, I wouldn't know what the hell to do in a hostage situation. Mm. And that's reflected in the choices that I'm making some kind of like movie-based, like action movie choices that aren't paying off, because these are not the
regular
characters.
People.
Yeah, these are like supposed to be real people.
Yeah, that's a little bit like this war of mine where it's like, well, just kill the guy and take the supplies. No, that will give them a horrific depression and they might want to kill themselves. Like,
you can't
just put people in these scenarios. I'm forgetting the name of the game that we played, I think last year, where Willem Dafoe, Daisy Ridley, James McAvoy, whatever that game's called.
12 minutes.
The whole idea of like the hostage situation, what would you do in that situation, and just figure it out. Like, I love games that put you in those scenarios, and it's like, and they've, as long as they've mapped out and accounted for your choices, and they're not just going to roadblock you with a restart. Like, that's why I really, like, you know, bounced off 12 minutes, because it was just like, no, you got this wrong. Go do half an hour of choices again to get back to that point. Same with The Quarry. It's like, something's just going to go wrong. Now this person's dead. Lol, keep going. It's just like, if you let me restart or whatever, let me have fun with the scenario, then there's a way way to make it work. But I get the knock-on effect of that is that nothing has any weight because you can't just keep restarting.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends how they balance that stuff overall.
Yeah, I mean, this so far, like you have to live with your consequences.
Mm.
But unlike the quarry, they do in the start menu have an easy way for you to see those branching choices without having to replay the whole game,
right.
As like kind of like the non-canon version of the story or whatever, which is really cool. I like that because then it does encourage you, like you say, to go and see those other options, see what else is available, which is really neat. I'm just, man, like, it reminded me a lot of 12 Minutes. It's funny that you bring that up when I was playing it in terms of the quality of the story, because similarly, I think they're two games that really had lofty ambitions, and one is to be like these really intense, prestigious stories, and both of them are kind of way more overblown than perhaps the original intention was, but that's, in both cases, the charm for me. It's reaching for something and not quite grasping it, but still having a lot of hearts, having a lot of charms, having a lot of ambition. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm dragging it a lot by saying that it's not a prestige TV show or whatever, but I almost recommend it more that it's not that, because it makes it more fun.
Devil May Cry 2 of Telltale aping games.
It's certainly not, but it's like, it's more like...
Final Fantasy 13? I don't know.
It has more in common with like Twin Peaks than it does True Detective. Detective, if that makes sense.
Yes.
There's a sense of surreality to it, and there's a eccentricity to it, which I like a lot.
That's cool. I was going to say, my voice is croaky as hell in this room, and I think it's because I was yelling at you while we played Halo 2 the other night, and I still don't think I've recovered from that. I've watched the footage back. It's on Twitter.
Yeah.
I love the way that went, because I was just thinking of that before. I was like, my voice is still shot from me going, no! as I dove off the map. But I love that we both, we landed a rocket on each other, and then I dove to my death.
Yes.
So I was just like, this is a horrendous way to go out, but that has irrevocably broken my throat.
It was the Rocky 3 ending, is when Apollo Creed and Rocky both punch each other at the same time. Unfortunately, I wasn't near a death drop and managed to win. Yeah, that was really intense, because I'm not sure if you know this, Scott. I mean, you do now, because we just played Halo 2, where I wasted a quite impressive lead, I must say.
The way that went, where you... Because we'd had a lot of cocktails. I had a lot of cocktails by that point. I was working my way through the menu. Shout out to NQ64 in Newcastle, or countrywide at this point in the UK, for opening up a barcade in Newcastle. We're not sponsored by them, but that's where we were. And that whole thing, they have a whole cocktail menu. I was working my way through that, and I was like, let's play Halo, that'll be lovely. I'm good at Halo, I think I'll do that. And then one thing that hit me immediately was how it felt from it was like 2004. Like, I've been playing the Master Chief Collection version of Halo 2, which is a world away from how it felt back in the day. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
No, I was just gonna say, like, I'm a big bottler. Like, if I'm winning and I've got people watching me, I will throw the game.
You did very well.
9 times out of 10.
Right.
I didn't. I almost lost, Scott, and I had a 5. I only needed one more point. You managed to get 5 out of nowhere.
You were doing very well. You were well ahead, and we had Nicholas was filming us, so he was with us anyway. And you were so far ahead. I was like, I've got it. I can't lose this much. Like, what am I doing? And I managed to claw it back. And then it was first to 15. You wanted to cap it at 10.
Yeah.
I think we would have won if we capped it at 10. And then you didn't win anyway. But then we were like, well, let's do it at 15. That's what the match thing is. And I managed to get it back to 14s each. And there's one bit, go check out the Twitter footage, where we just shoot at each other, the final point, and I jump as I shoot, and I jump off the map. But both of us still hit each other, so both of our shields went down. The next hit would have done it, but I killed myself, which gave you the point. I was oh my God, so close.
Would you like to tell the people the other game that we played, a little game called Tekken 2, which I have never played, by the way.
Tekken 5?
Well, let's not talk about Tekken 5.
Would have been Tekken 2.
Oh, sorry, Tekken 2, Street Fighter 2.
Yes.
Street Fighter 2, which I am not well versed in,
and yet
still came out on top. What's that about, Scott?
I'm not going to lie. I might have spent some time Googling this, because I was just like, how am I dying when I'm landing so many more hits on you? Or my drunk brain thought I was anyway. And I played as Ryu, you played as Blanka, and I feel like I hit you loads, and your dude just would not die.
Know if I was blocking. Can you block in?
You can't Street block, Fighter you just 2? Don't push anything.
Okay.
Or you push the direction away. Either way, I Googled this stuff. I was like, is there damage allocation? Does Blanka do more damage? What's going on? And there's a whole Reddit thread of people like me going like, well, there must be something wrong with this. And it's just like, some characters do take more damage than others. Apparently Ryu's defense is not very good.
Right.
Fortnite.
I wish I knew that going in. I would have played as someone else. But still, you wiped the floor with me in Street Fighter 2, and then I wiped the floor with you in Tekken 5.
Annihilated. Which was unbelievable.
Which I kind of needed at that point in the night, because I'd lost Halo and I'd lost Street Fighter. I was like, what even am I at this stage? But I think overall, it's like one game each that we trounced each other at, and then we met in the middle of Halo, but you still won at, because I died. But I want to carry that forward to whatever our next thing is.
See, I don't. I want to retire right now while I'm on top, and I will never lose this bragging right. I don't ever want to lose it, because it's something that I can hold over you forever.
Well, you could if my brain recognized it as you winning. I recognize it more as me diving off the map. I give it to you, but I want to carry that forward. I don't fully take that as a loss.
I mean, yeah,
I defeated myself.
You might have, but on the scoreboard, when it comes to the big W and whose name is right next to that, I'm afraid it was Josh Brown's, you know?
Big dub. Speaking of big wins, you wanted to mention on the podcast that you'd had a lovely Guinness this weekend.
I had.
You wanted to drop that in.
I was just going to say, speaking of this lovely weekend that we've both had, I wanted to tell you that yesterday I was out with a friend of mine, Matt, who plays in a great band called The Academic, which everyone should check out. And I was going to the pub with him, and he said, I'll get you a drink. What do you want? And I was like, whatever you're having.
Right.
And then he offered me, I got there, and there was a Guinness on the table, and I thought, this is lovely, but at the same time, I've never had a pint of Guinness in my life. I've drank bits of Guinness.
Why have you never had Guinness?
Well, it's just because it looks like Bovril, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It looks like a roast dinner in a pint glass.
It is oily.
And I was too ashamed to say that I've never had a pint of Guinness.
Right.
So he was saying, oh, very smoky notes. And I was like, yeah, I have no idea what this is supposed to taste like. And what I wanted to say, I know you're, you know, a connoisseur of stouts and whatnot.
Yes.
So I was going to say, is it mad to never have a Guinness? And are you a Guinness fan? And where does the perfect Guinness come from?
I don't think it's mad to never have one, but I think the reputation of Guinness, it should be, quote unquote, one of the first things you try once you're of legal age or whenever you want to get interested in alcohol. In terms of Guinnesses, it never really clicked with me. I do think it's an acquired taste. But when I went to Ireland and actually went to the Guinness brewery, that was the best Guinness in the world. Like, I mean, it literally is. It's the best sourced stuff. And me and my wife just drank Guinness for like 4 days straight, which if you're going to do that, you're going to be prepared for your body doing stuff to you afterwards. Just saying. No one told me that was going to happen. But Guinness, yeah, I think it's an acquired taste that once you've acquired it is incredible. And I forget what your third question was.
I think it was just where's the best Guinness from?
Definitely go to the brewery. I love the brewery. But yeah, I think, what did you think of it as never having had it before? Because it's a weird flavor group and it's like a whole other thing. Yeah.
It was way better than it looked, is
good.
What I'll say.
Yes.
It's so smooth,
man.
It is. It's so much smoother than I expected
Stouts
it to be.
Of the way, brother.
And I really enjoyed it. And I just thought I'd bring it up because Scott Tilford, if you don't know at home, is my trustworthy source for anything liquid-based.
Did a coffee brew this morning.
That's exactly it. The man was showing me how to brew a proper coffee this morning. He is my surrogate father and will get me through the liquid-based problems of my life.
Yes, now and forever. Yes, we did some lovely little coffee brewing. I can't make a connection. Actually, yes, I can. Joel Miller loves a good coffee. I've been playing Last of Us 2. I'll talk about this a little bit and then we'll get into the gaming news. Last of Us 2, I wanted to go back to because obviously the part one remake, remaster, whatever you want to call it, is coming out later this year. A lot of controversy around that as whether it's worth £70, whatever. But I've not played through Last of Us 2 since 2020. And I like that game as a game. I like that, like the way that it played and everything. I think it is immaculate. It's just that when I hit the credits, I didn't want that story like from a Last of Us sequel. And it kind of just put me off replaying it or going for the platinum or whatever. Now, 2 years later, I think that time passed only benefits that game. Like the more you can divorce yourself from the leaks that happened, like all the conversations around what happened in the story, the shock factor that comes with the intro. I think that level of shock that comes from the intro, which Naughty Dog themselves or Neil Druckmann has said, they didn't expect people to react this much to what happens at the start of that game to keep it spoiler free. But I don't know how they couldn't expect that, really. I mean, I think they just didn't realize just how much people were investing in certain aspects of that story. But my point is that is such a sideswipe when you play it in 2020 that it's very hard to think about anything else.
Yeah.
And so because the story is then bisected between two characters, you just want to get back to the character set that tells you more about the thing that just happened. And so for me, the first time I went through it, I kind of was just rushing to get back to the Ellie stuff. I just wanted to know more about her and what she was going to do next. And as much as I really like Abby as a character, I didn't care. Like, I always think that the test in Last of Us 2 is that there's a scene where you play as Abby and you go up against Ellie for the first time when they finally meet each other. It's a boss fight. Basically, I always ask people, like, you know, did you let Ellie kill you as Abby? Did you see if the story was going to branch? Because I think you can hinge the whole game on that fight, because at that point, you're supposed to be in, from Abby's perspective, and you're supposed to, like, at least just fight Ellie and maybe win as Abby, maybe see her point of view. I think the fact that nearly all of us, everyone I've ever talked to, has just said, yeah, I'll let Ellie beat me because I'm still on her side and whatever, kind of breaks that game. However, to bring it back to now, I think that as much as I've not got to the Abby stuff yet, I'm about 16 hours in, I'm like rinsing that game. I'm on a harder difficulty, which I would massively recommend. I think that game is much better on hard or grounded. More so hard, because you keep the listen mode stuff.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But I just think it really works as more of a mystery narrative. Like, if you take the thing that happens at the start as just a catalyst and not this oh my god moment, then the rest of that game's framing is just a really cool mystery narrative where you don't know why the thing is that's gone down and you're trying to piece it all together. And I said the difficulty side of it just works as really, really brutal survival horror where you're just, you know, getting crafting components, putting things together, trying to figure out the truth. And if you just try and take it more as it is and not as a Last of Us 2, then right. It kind of works better that way. Like, the more baggage you bring in from one, the more things you want to see, the more that game doesn't want to show you them, which is one of the things that, one of the reasons why people hate it so much.
You've mentioned a lot of really interesting points there.
Thank you.
I'm loving your Last of Us 2 re-journey, I would describe it as. I want to quickly touch upon the Joel thing, yes. Not to open up that discourse too much, but the response to how Joel's story goes in the sequel always surprised me, because I always thought that was so heavily hinted at from the very first trailer.
Really?
I remember me and you, I mean, one of my very first videos at whatculture.com was about that first trailer and how we thought Joel's story was going to go. And I, you know, again, no major spoilers for The Last of Us Part 2, but you could always sense that he had consequences coming his way for what happened in Part 1. You could always, felt like that was unfinished and that he wasn't going to get away with his actions without facing the music in some form, at least for me. So I was bracing myself all the way through the game. For him to kind of have to own up to, you know, what he's done. Like, I didn't think that Naughty Dog was going to let this guy necessarily live with the events
what
of
he's
part
done.
One. Yeah, who he is as a person. You
yes,
know?
In the words of Linkin Park, what he's done. But I think for me, the whole value or big part of the value in Last of Us 1 was that philosophical conversation that came out of the ending, which was what would you have done? Would you have sacrificed the few for the many, etc.? And that the interpretational nature of the final cut, the fact that they show Ellie's facial expression and just cut to black, and it's like, what do you think she's thinking? What do you think Joel sees in her? How much truth is there in that exchange? Does she know the truth, etc.? I love how much mileage there was there in that conversation. Like we've done videos on, like, you know, is Joel the villain, etc. And I didn't. I think it's interesting that Naughty Dog just went, no, he is the villain, and like we're going to literally give you the answer.
Yeah.
And I think that's as a creative, for a creative studio, that's a hell of a swerve to do when you've had almost a decade of conversations around interpretational endings, to literally go back and go, no, you guys got it wrong. It's this.
Yeah.
And then to sort of like, and then not only to like nail that to the wall, but to do so with such a visceral scene, and then to then, you know, pad it out that way and make you see this other person's perspective and everything else. I think that's where a lot of the anger comes from, because as much as you can say, like, if you take it down the perspective of like, I would never do, not me, but if you were on that side of I would never do what Joel did, then meeting it out that way is like, well, you were just wrong, and like, you know, it's that whole thing. And I think that the way that they play it into, I think, is very bold. And like I said, the reason I have a whole other thought process on it is that they've rebranded Last of Us 1 to Last of Us Part 1. And I think that when you start thinking of Last of Us Part 2 as the middle point in hopefully a trilogy, because they've said they've mapped out a Part 3, I think it makes the whole thing sit differently. I think you think of it as what will hopefully be Ellie's trilogy, but if you think of the whole thing as Ellie's story overall and not Joel's story, I think once you see the whole set of actions from her perspective, I think it makes that whole opening swerve just land differently.
Yeah.
And you sort of see just how much her actions are influenced by Joel across Part 2, and how visceral she's becoming, and how much she doesn't really want to do that. She thinks she's supposed to do that because of the lessons that were taught her by Joel. And I think that it's just interesting. I think it's an interesting point in gaming history. You think about where protagonists were at back in 2013, or where entertainment was at, and you think about where we are now. And there was always, Ellie's perspective was always there. It's just that obviously Joel was front-loaded. He is the playable protagonist. But you do spend a lot of time with Ellie. And I think that when you start thinking of The Last of Us as Ellie's story, I think that's just as a trilogy, or even as a two-piece now.
Yeah.
It's like you had like Joel's part of her life, and then you've got Dina's part of her life, and then we'll see whatever happens after that. But I think those different elements land differently when you're not thinking of it as Joel's story.
Right, yeah, I think that's totally true as well. And I think, like you say, you know, the Part 1 sort of rebranding now that Naughty Dog is allowed to put Ellie front and center, because they got a lot of pushback about doing that at the time. A lot of people just wanted Joel on the cover, for instance, but they were
from
like,
the executive point of view, apparently, not necessarily the fans, but I think it was,
oh no, yeah, totally.
It was like a business thing.
Yeah, so I mean, like business, you know, marketers who were like, you know, don't put the girl, the young girl on like the poster because it probably won't sell, put the dude on it, and they were like, ah, but it's as much her story as it is Joel's, etc. I like that they're finally able to do that now with the Part 1 rebranding, being like, look, Ellie is,
look at the new box art, like,
yeah, I mean, look at the new box art, 100%. And we're going on a slight tangent right now, because The Last of Us Part 2 actually reminds me of Better Call Saul, which is the Breaking Bad prequel, which could have been like a real fan service heavy show. It could have been, and initially was pitched as, a half an hour comedy starring Saul Goodman doing tricks and kind of not having much depth, essentially giving the fans what they wanted from the character as he was depicted in Breaking Bad. But as a prequel, they decided to not do that and not dive into the kind of fan service-y side of it. And in many ways, especially in the later seasons, actively avoid giving you kind of too many parallels to the Breaking Bad story, and it wanted to be its own thing. It wanted to give you a new perspective on this character. And for me, that's what The Last of Us Part 2 does. It could have been another Joel and Ellie adventure. And you do kind of get that with some of the flashbacks that are in the game, but instead it offers you a different view of a character that you know intimately. And then, like you said, reframes what came before. And for me, that's why it's so, well, that's why I love it so much. That's why it feels so rich, because it not only works as its own thing, but it makes you look at the thing that you already loved in a different light, which is also, like I said, what Better Call Saul does, which is why I was making that comparison.
No, totally. I think the one thing I love as well is you think about like Ellie as a character and how much she, like, you know, when she's younger in Last of Us Part 1, like she just wants to, just wants to love. Like there's a part of her that just wants to love. Like there's that scene where she's going face to face with Joel in Last of Us 1 where she's like, like, you know, I thought that we had something, I thought this was different, and I wasn't just cargo and whatever. And that's such a powerful scene. And you kind of see this person who's just been brought up in the apocalypse and just wants to try and connect with someone, whether it's Riley, whether it's Joel, whether it's Dina, Tommy, whatever. And I think if you kind of just take that across both games, you see her like trying to forge connections, being afraid of doing it, and then horrible things happening when she lets herself be vulnerable and she's steeling herself against that. It's like, okay, every time I try and be human, something else happens. And I feel like there's a whole side of The Last of Us as a fiction, which is The Last of Us name is like, you think, I always used to think of it as population, like it's literal numbers. It's The Last of Us because it's a literal populace. This is what's left. The way The Last of Us 1 opens with like the military has cordoned off what's left and they're like putting people through processing and everything else. But I think of it more now as the last of what's left, the remnants of humanity. And I did say this in the 2020 video about explaining the ending. I think The Last of Us, ironically, is one of the most like human enriching stories, one of the most positively viewed, energetic, uplifting franchises going, even though it's dire as hell, but because it's about the little moments of light in there. Like it's about the fact that the game is so like pro-animal and pro-animals and pro-music and pro-companionship and love and everything else. And it's about wrenching those elements of humanity back from the apocalypse. And I feel like, again, when you view it that way, it makes more sense. You just need to not think of it as Joel's story, essentially, or like Joel's trilogy or whatever. And that is potentially a fault with the marketing. Like there's maybe a way that I would have redone the lead up to The Last of Us Part 2. Or they could have always had a Part 1, but I guess they didn't necessarily know they were going to do a Part 2 until later. But Ellie's agency, like you said, was always in there. It was just like, in terms of the box art, it was kind of buried in terms of her being the face of The Last of Us. That just couldn't be the case. And there is the reality that we are playing as, and it's not that Joel's point of view is not important. Well, it obviously is. But I think that it's also just as interesting saying like, okay, if we focus on Ellie overall, where she was in Part 1, where she is in Part 2, she's just trying to forge some connection whilst learning the lessons of the world around her and where that leads her. And scenes like, you know, in Part 2, when she comes across what Tommy's been doing and how he's been torturing people, and she sort of learns that, okay, this is how I need to force this person to talk to me. And it's just doing things that she thinks she's supposed to, where she says at the beginning, you know, like, you know, if Joel was doing XYZ thing, he'd be doing this. And it's like, that's what I'm going to go and do. I'm going to go like carve a path through half of America and get some answers. And it's just like, okay, but there's this whole other way that you could be living, making itself available over here. Why don't you do that? And it's like this whole conversation with video game violence and everything else, which... just keep going on about stuff. There's a bit that was always in the trailer where she kills a person playing a PS Vita and they're playing Hotline Miami, and they and like one of the main taglines of Hotline Miami is do you enjoy hurting people? And which is in itself, this is always in there. I was noticed this in back in 2020, but I like that whole thing of Ellie giving in to the violent side of her. It's not that the violence isn't a release. She definitely has rage because of what happened at the start. But yeah, all those conversations around the utilization of violence, which I think is something that God of War did so well, is also in The Last of Us. It's just that it needs to come more from Ellie's perspective and not a lack of what's not there.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's important to come, it's important to come from Ellie, because Joel is so entrenched in that life. He almost can't get out of it. Right. You know, he's living a more subdued life in Jackson in Part 2, but there's still that part of him that's kind of almost inherently broken from what he's seen, from what he's lived through, from like the 20 years of just kind of, you know, being a bandit and being a dick with his brother Tommy and stuff, and putting him through the ringer. But Ellie kind of still has the potential to be better.
Yeah.
And I love that Joel is still incredibly important to the story, because he's like, he's still the anchor. He has such influence on her, and she's kind of figuring out how to take the lessons from this father figure, this tragically flawed father figure that she like loves, and how does she become better than him? And I love that that's essentially the story of Part 2. It's like how, trying to figure out what his teachings actually were.
Yeah.
And it's not just about being the meanest, the toughest dude in the West. It's about also, you know, caring and loving and trying to balance the two, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And that's their ultimate comment on, like, the things that they seed with the Seraphites and the WLF and all that kind of stuff, of, like, hate manifesting in a religious context or a militaristic context, and, like, you know, conflict breeds conflict kind of thing. And that being, you know, you can just settle down with someone and love and start a family and have a richer life that way. You don't have to give in to all this conflict stuff.
Yeah, I think at like a base level, you know, like Druckmann and like you mentioned there, like The Last of Us 1 was always talked to be about love. And yeah. for whatever Joel did in that game, yes, it might have been selfish love, but it was out of love. You know what I mean? He did some abhorrent things, but it was out of love for Ellie. And I think The Last of Us Part 2 is about hate because Ellie's motivations are so driven by hate. Like it's
like an assumption of hate. Like she definitely has some of it, but like the lengths that she goes to.
100%. And I think ultimately, like, again, we're skirting around spoilers to an extent, like her journey through that game is kind of figuring out how to, why is she doing what she's doing and kind of figuring out that it is mostly rooted in hate rather than the love for someone else. Because if she was truly doing what she's doing out of love, like Joel arguably was in the first game, she wouldn't go to the extremes that she did.
Nope.
And I like that kind of like pulls it back towards the end. Mm-hmm. I'm explaining this really poorly, but I'm trying not to spoil too much about what happens.
We'll do, obviously when Last of Us Part 1 comes out, we're probably going to go through that. And I think you're going to end up playing Part 2 again. So we might do another, like a proper spoiler cast towards the end of the year. Because I feel like you on about the discourse earlier on. And there's Last of Us 2 is such a cloud over that IP. Like it's just, it doesn't get its day in the sun that much because people just don't like talking about it. Because oh my God, there's this big reaction online. But we're 2 years after that. We have to be able to have healthy conversations about games that are worth having conversations about. And so I think maybe we do another spoiler cast on The Last of Us 2 towards the end of this year and talk about how it sits after going back through Part 1 and if any of the re-renderings of those characters make any parts of Part 1 land differently. But yeah, I like the whole thing of humanity in an apocalypse and what does that mean to be human? What does it mean to love and care and hate as well? All coming through Ellie. She's like born in the apocalypse, or at least she's very much grown up through it, and just taking on these lessons that this is how she thinks she's supposed to be, and then like growing up as herself and having her own agency, and getting lost in a world of violence because that's the world presented to her. And is there a way to be better than that? Super quickly, do you think if they do a part three, they fill out that gap with Joel? Because you have that bit where he, at the very beginning of Last of Us 1, he's taking care of Sarah. He's like a trucker or something. He's a haulage guy. Assumedly he's moving cargo around, and then next time we see him he's with Tess and he's done some horrible things and he refers to what he did in that gap. And so is that the way you do a part three? You do Ellie learning to be better and you do the downfall of Joel and you show how he got to that point?
I don't think so, just because I feel like that's already, there's enough in there to understand why Joel is the way he is.
True.
I don't think you necessarily need to see it. Like you already know that he's done some bad stuff, and I don't know what you would necessarily gain from showing that. It would be cool to see, no doubt. But from a storytelling perspective, I don't think it would change anything viewing that.
I just think thematically, like if you really want to button, if you want to put a button on how someone becomes so lost, like morally or in terms of like being able to do what he did at the end of Last of Us Part 1, then maybe you do show the descent of someone, like giving into the barbarism side of it and giving into being increasingly violent. And there was that friction between Joel and Tommy, because it's like Tommy who's clearly, like Joel says, like, I got us through this. Like, you weren't prepared to do what I did. And we don't know what that was necessarily. Yeah. But it's like, maybe you show that and then you parallel that with, like I said, like Ellie realizing that that's not the way to be. And there are other ways to be, even in a world full of hate or whatever it is. Yeah, I wonder what they're going to do for a part three. They've said, like I said, they've sketched out a draft for it and stuff. So maybe we'll eventually get a Last of Us Part 3.
For me, not to elongate this point forever.
Yes.
But if they were going to do that, I think it would have made more sense in part two, where Ellie is kind of falling off the rails and show how she's maybe paralleling Joel at the start of the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Going forward, I want to be like, I want Joel's influence to be the man who he is in part two, like the kind of more mellow dude who's like learned from those lessons and being like, look, I've been this bad guy. Like I've pushed me and my brother through this apocalypse, but at what cost? He like doesn't like me anymore. He resents the things that I made him do to survive and whatnot. Like,
I think Tommy likes Joel.
He loves him, but like you said, you know, when he meets him in part one, it's frosty. He hasn't seen him in years. He thinks he's a piece of trash, and he does resent what they did to survive, like the kind of bad dudes that they at least fell in with.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely love there, but honestly, I'd kind of maybe contest the fact that he likes him.
I think in part two, that's what you were referring to.
Part one, sorry.
I think there is still some ground to cover there if they want to do it. It depends how much they think, Naughty Dog, they think that they have to do Joel stuff coming out of Last of Us Part Two. I would rather like just do something completely different at this point, but I would also take filling in those gaps, because there are bits that you can still do if you want to do the descent of man, let's say, in terms of like giving in to primal instincts or whatever it is to get by, and do that whole thing with Joel, how he becomes this like machine that he is in like 2013, the 2013 game. So now we would usually do some gaming news, but I'm realizing that we're 40 English minutes into this.
Wow.
So we're going to wrap some stuff. I mentioned there were gaming bits and pieces doing the rounds, but we'll just do some video versions of them. We'll stick them up on the YouTube. So go check those out. For now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tailford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Have a Guinness.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.